Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw. Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Brandon, how do you feel about Becky Lynch being added to the Asuka versus Bianca Belair match? You know me on principle. I like the one-on-one matches. This might be a situation where I understand the exception to the rule if you're going to make exceptions. You have now added a heel and a big star to the match, but it feels a bit fresher than it would maybe just Becky Bianca one-on-one, which maybe you want to save. How do you feel?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm largely okay with it because I think that they are trying to save Becky and Bianca's one-on-one rematch. I think Asuka has been away from the title picture long enough that it feels fresh to put her back in there. And I don't think that there's necessarily a ton of heat behind a Bianca Belair versus Asuka one-on-one match right now, given that Asuka is just coming back, hasn't really been in much of a storyline thus far, and they're both babyfaces. So this is one of those scenarios where I do think adding Lynch to the match does make it stronger, even if it is the triple threat. I also think it's sort of necessary for the card as a whole because it doesn't feel like a huge event given the lack of Roman Reigns. So adding Becky Lynch, the biggest remaining star on Raw, is definitely a plus overall. But I don't like how they got there. I just don't like how in both of these instances, these one-on-one matches to close Raw the last 2 weeks, they went with just that quick finish. And I get why they do it, but it just ends up kind of cheapening everyone involved. And no one comes out looking like a strong contender, but rather like they just got a fluke victory over the other.
It seems like WWE is doing, I mean, they either are or they aren't. It's not, it seems, doing more play on finishes with countouts. It just seems to be kind of the finish du jour lately to play off of countouts. And I don't mind that. I actually think it's kind of an underutilized finish and in some ways a little maligned, because I think if you can knock your opponent out so they can't re-enter the ring after 10 seconds, that means something. I mean, you're not making physical contact with them at the moment like you're on a submission or a pin, but it's a worthwhile victory. So of course, there can be tainted versions of it or fluke versions of it, just like with pinfalls and just like with submissions. If someone's got their foot on the rope or someone gets knocked out with foreign object first and that kind of thing. It just seems like they're bringing that back. Do you think I'm imagining that or playing it up too much?
No, I think there's been sort of a focus on that, which It just depends. If you're doing it multiple times a show, then I think it stands out kind of too much. And that's the thing with WWE. It seems to be that if they get attached to a specific finish, especially, you know, one that doesn't really put anybody over, they tend to beat it into the ground really heavily. And that's the case with like the DQ finishes or the distraction finishes. I mean, they do those all the time. So it does feel good to see them mix it up a little, but it already feels to me like there might be a bit of over-reliance on it, and mm-hmm. that worries me.
No, WWE wouldn't do that.
No, never.
And that's kind of where I'm heading a little bit, is I like the finish, but just because you're playing with this new toy again or thinking it's in bounds, it's like the distraction finish. They just can't do anything in moderation and have it mean something. And, and part of it is just establishing through commentary that a countout finish is something to be proud of. You know, I mean, they kind of, I don't know, how do you think they did following up on Lashley's, kind of flukish win last week? Do you think that's a little bit of a sidebar here, but do you think the announcers did a decent job not celebrating Lashley too much?
Yeah, I thought they did a decent enough job. Nothing about it really stood out to me one way or the other, and I think that's probably the way that you want to go ultimately. I don't know that you want to draw a ton of attention to it other than to say that, you kind of kicked the can down the road and made it so that you can get to another match. That the Lashley segment tonight stood out to me for a different reason, in that I thought that Lashley seemed to fumble his way through that promo a bit and came off a little awkward. He did kind of save it toward the end there, but I think we sort of saw, you know, why there may be a ceiling for Bobby Lashley without MVP, and I don't think it was a super great night for him in that sense.
I'm totally with you. Yeah, I mean, it just wasn't. It wasn't a strong promo for him. I mean, I've seen worse from him, but that just wasn't a main event lead babyface promo, you know. And it's just like, and there's little things like when you say hell in the cell instead of hell in a cell. I mean, I don't want to like draw too much attention to that, but like, are you paying any attention? Do you like watch the show? Do you hear the announcers? I mean, after year after year after year after year after year of people saying hell in a cell. Like, early on, it was fine. Like, oh, it's, you know, could be either, and everyone got it mixed up a little bit. But it's just sort of, it's like you're not watching the product if you're, or listening to the product. It's some of the issues I had with Jimmy Smith early on in his run. You know, week one, you're throwing in, okay, mistakes are going to be made, but by week three, I want evidence you've watched 40 episodes of Raw so that you're caught up. You know, that's what you get paid to do, put in the extra work early on. So, again, not a huge deal in that didn't make or break the promo, but I think it's maybe symptomatic of Lashley just not being as engaged just mentally in his character, or maybe just he's just as a babyface, he's not very excited doing babyface promos. He doesn't have a lot to sink his teeth into. But I agree that was one of the, you know, probably one of the on the hits and miss list, one of the misses on the show. But the main event, what'd you think of the? Oh, you know, we talk about the countout finish. I want to say this too. The wrestler sitting at ringside who then gets hit, which leads to some sort of amplified grudge or misunderstanding and all that. Like, the coincidences happen a little too often. I know, you know, Kevin Owens was at ringside and he was yelling and he ended up voluntarily getting involved, not sort of passively getting involved like Bianca. But that's another one of those little things where I'm like, it just feels a little too convenient. Like, to me, you do that when, in this case, Asuka is actually intending but wants plausible deniability to kick Belair. But that's not the story WWE was telling tonight.
Yeah, there's so many places for a wrestler's body to land in, you know, at the ringside area, and somehow if one of their rivals happens to be out there, it just always happens to be right in their lap, so that they can get the, you know, the guaranteed interference that leads to the finish that they want. It's sort of one of those things that they do regularly that you can get away with on occasion, but most of the time, because of the amount that they rely on it, it ends up feeling too cute.
Yeah. Yep. They're just, you know, people don't want the murderer introduced in the last chapter of a mystery novel. You know, it's got to be, and people don't want, you know, like unlikely coincidences being, you know, implausibly unlikely coincidences being the driving force in feuds or match outcomes. And yeah.
It also just speaks to sort of the lack of investment that I feel when I watch the weekly TV shows. Because if you're watching a show like this, if you're watching Raw and Kevin Owens is at ringside and he's sitting there on commentary watching the match, you've got a pretty good inkling from the beginning that he's going to get involved one way or another. And maybe it's going to end the match with a distraction finish, or worse, it's going to end in a non-finish. So it makes it really hard to get invested in what is sometimes a really good TV match, even if it doesn't mean a ton in the grand scheme of things. It's always hard to get invested. And I felt that way tonight with Cody Rhodes and The Miz, for example. I mean, they sold that match really hard and they, you know, gave it multiple segments and had the graphics for it and everything. But it always felt to me like Seth Rollins was going to cause a distraction DQ. I mean, it never felt like it'd be anything else.
Yep. No, I agree. All right, well, let's pause here and introduce ourselves, give out the phone numbers and emails, encourage people to join the conversation tonight. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, May 23rd, 2022. And I am Wade Keller, the host of the program, and we're here to talk, of course, about Monday Night Raw. The other voice you hear is Brandon LeClaire, a PWTorch.com contributor. He writes up pay-per-view reports alongside mine, for AEW and WWE. We have a busy couple weekends coming up, Brandon.
Yeah, for sure. Between Double or Nothing this weekend, that'll be my first official covering of the AEW pay-per-views. I have done one in the past, and it was a whirlwind. But I am looking looking forward to this one, and then Hell in a Cell in 2 weeks, which feels strange. It doesn't feel like we're that far removed from WrestleMania Backlash, but this does begin WWE's trend for the summer of doing these first weekend of the month pay-per-views. They're kind of switching it up.
Yes. Yep, they are. All right. So, welcome back to the co-host chair, and I look forward to covering more of Raw as we go here. We also invite our listeners to participate. Give us a call if you haven't already right now. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. I don't anticipate this. I'm always wrong on this, but I don't anticipate this being one of our longer post shows, given the content of Raw tonight. Not that there's not stuff to talk about, but it's not like, you know, a long list of blockbuster controversial long topics. So if you're thinking of calling, get in line sooner, not later. Sometimes people chime in as the show goes on. The other way to communicate with us and contribute to the show is via email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, Brandon, let's get rolling and see what our callers have to say. We'll start with William in San Diego tonight. William, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
The thing on my mind right now about Raw was my favorite moment of the night. You had Jimmy Smith on commentary, and they were talking about the finish to last week's Bobby versus Omos match, and how they were going to fight at Hell in a Cell. And Jimmy Smith goes, well, if the steel cage can't contain them, maybe the cell can. And then they cut to Bobby Lashley in the ring. And you can see in the background Corey Graves like doing like the Daniel Bryan no thing like at Jimmy Smith, like saying like, what are you doing? Like, that's not what we're advertising. We're just saying that they're going to fight at Hell in a Cell, not inside Hell in a Cell. Like, you're getting way ahead of yourself, man. Like, what are you doing? And Jimmy Smith like, oh, I'm sorry, man. Like, he gives him, like, a thumbs up. Like, is that, like, a spoiler? Is that, like, the only stipulation that seems to be possible now?
If it weren't Jimmy Smith, I'd say it's a spoiler. But, I mean, Jimmy's likable, but he's a little dopey. Comes across a little. I mean, and I don't, there's no way to make that sound nice. But Jimmy's not like the expert. You know, he's not the guy who, he's just sort of dropped in the middle of the WWE world, and he's got professional credentials, and he's calling it as he interprets it. But he doesn't seem to pick up on WWE's way of doing things, or he just gets kind of sloppy sometimes. There's something else where the heels were getting heat at ringside, and he's like, you gotta give it to this. He's got to get to the heels for cheating. Like, that's essentially what he said. I'm like, no, the heels are actually trying to get heat for cheating. Having the lead announcer praise them for their ingenuity is actually counterproductive to the intended story going on. Otherwise, the heels wouldn't cheat. There's no point for heels cheating and only heels cheating as opposed to baby faces. It's a shortcut, and it's to be looked down upon, and you should not want to cheer people who cheat. But when you have Smith praising them for their ingenuity, it's completely counterproductive to the whole purpose of what the wrestlers are doing. So he still just does things where you're like, but I need to go back and rewatch that, William. I did not see that, but it is also my favorite part of the show, even though I haven't seen it. Before we change topics, or William, you can follow up in a second. Brandon, just give us your update on how Jimmy Smith is doing as an announcer. Do you pick up on kind of those things? And to me, it makes the show more entertaining because I know it's upsetting Corey Graves, and it's kind of fun when Corey Graves is upset. I think Corey does a good job, but, you know, he's got so much to do. He's taken heat for bringing up Sasha and Naomi, and it's like he's just doing what he's told people. And he takes heat for other things he says that he's just ordered to do. And I think he's good at what he does, but he's in a tough spot. But that said, he has someone who you sort of enjoy when he's getting aggravated by things too. So anyway, go ahead.
I certainly, overall, I never thought that I'd say I prefer a Michael Cole-led commentary team, but I very much prefer the SmackDown crew to the Raw crew. Corey Graves has been more grating to me than not in the last several years, and I think that has only continued. But I do appreciate and respect sort of the level of the amount that's on his plate, because really, even though Jimmy is sort of the lead guy, he's at the front of the play-by-play aspect of the team, you can tell that it's sort of Corey's table to navigate, because he's got the most front and center experience. Saxton has been there, you know, doing the same gig as Corey for about as long, but he's never been the focal point of a team, whereas, you know, Graves worked so closely with Michael Cole. So Corey seems like he's sort of in charge of that, and so you do pick up on when he needs to sort of wrangle Jimmy in and kind of lead him in directions that maybe Jimmy isn't getting the hint on. I think that Jimmy has improved, but I still don't think he's particularly good.
The thing that has actually made Jimmy more tolerable to me is that he doesn't talk like he's trying to lift a car by the bumper all the time. I don't know why he did that at the beginning, but it's like, we're here, we're right. It's just like, I can't even do it for 3 seconds without having to go into a coughing fit. And like, he doesn't do that anymore. Like, he's you know, he has a professional sounding voice, but he's not straining like it's some sort of, you know, technique that makes it more exciting. So that was like 65% of what just made him difficult to listen to. And he's come along. He's not saying things that aren't things anymore very often. You know, like, he just makes things up, like, because he thought he could get away with it or didn't know any better, you know. What? And he's not saying veteran move, like, 3-4 times a show for things that aren't veteran move. They're just things wrestlers do. So, I mean, a lot of the things were just sort of, you know, I enjoyed picking on him about it a little bit because he was, you know, dropped into the middle of something because he had MMA credentials. He was given a chance to leap ahead in line over people who actually followed the WWE product and were more equipped for that job. And, I mean, I was told that outright, you know, that they were hiring people with certain credentials. That's why the previous guy, Adnan Virk, had that MLB, ESPN, whatever experience, and that's why Pat McAfee's there. And some people are better than others. And if you're going to get a chance to just leapfrog onto the number one ranked national cable wrestling show, the standards are high, and he didn't meet them. But a lot of things that bug me about him are he has improved, and now it's down to just saying things that are kind of screwing up, and it's sort of amusing because there's so many. It does draw attention to some of WWE's rules, and by the way, that's WWE paying the price for being ambiguous about the whole thing. You know, William, I mean, part of what WWE's doing is I think they just want people to think every match is going to be in a Hell in a Cell. You know, like, I don't think they're being I think they're intentionally not being specific and making it clear. And so I think Jimmy is as confused as the average viewer because of how WWE is doing this.
To that point too, Wade, I mean, if you look at the match graphics for the show, it's confusing in its own right, because in the past, I think they've done a decent job at separating the Hell in a Cell logo from the actual text of the match.
Yeah.
So typically, like, I think it was last year, like, the Hell in a Cell logo and text was positioned behind the avatars of the wrestlers, whereas this year they have it below the avatars of the wrestlers with their names. So, you know, X versus Y, right below the logo, which makes it look like X versus Y in a Hell in a Cell match, even though it's not.
Yeah. Yep. All right, William, back to you.
I think I mentioned it, or it came up a couple of weeks ago. The whole Cody thing is also kind of the Money in the Bank ad. It's also being kind of intentionally ambiguous with the whole men and women will get the chance to main event WrestleMania if they win the briefcase or however it's worded. So, it does seem like they add to the whole confusion or ambiguity on purpose just to, like, you know, they're not, like, promising anything explicitly, just kind of hinting at stuff. But I would go back and watch that whole Jimmy Smith thing, because it was, like, the way it was framed was just, like, accidentally, like a Mel Brooks film or like a sitcom. I almost expected someone like walking by like on fire or whatever. My next topic.
Remind everybody, William. Remind anyone who wants to go back on their DVR, including me. What segment was it where this happened?
Yeah, it was the first time Bobby Lashley came out. I think it was right after I think they played like a video package, and they were like hyping up the fact that they were going to fight at Hell in a Cell, and that's where or when Jimmy said, "Oh man, if the steel cage couldn't hold them last week, maybe Cell will do the job," or something like that. And then you just saw Corey Graves like, "No, what are you doing?" But it was very animated in a pretty funny way. My next topic was, what do you guys think of the Veer segment? I thought this was a pretty big miss, just having him, like, they were trying to make him sound and look intimidating, and you were supposed to, I guess you were kind of, like, supposed to fear for Jerry Lawler, but the whole time I just didn't feel like anything was really going to happen. Like, he was, he didn't feel like an unhinged character that could snap at any moment. And especially when he was just standing there, kind of growling a little while Jerry Lawler was making fun at him, like at his face, like he was being like pretty blatant and, I don't know, like not you know, being cowardly about it or anything. He was just like to his face making fun of him. And I just thought it didn't do him any good this week. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I wasn't impressed with Veer's believability as an unhinged villain who can, you know, just is uncontrollable, because every week he comes out on Raw and then dutifully stands in the ring for 8 to 13 minutes while WWE airs a bunch of video segments and commercials, and then his match starts. I mean, it ruins his gimmick to me. I don't know how many people are thinking about it, but to me, but I don't think it goes unnoticed by everybody. I mean, he comes out and it's like, oh yeah, now I got to stand in the ring for this whole long, you know, I get him when other people do it, cause they're, you know, they know how the format works, but that shouldn't be the case for him. So, and I also just don't, he comes across as sort of a mid-level indie, a mid-level wrestling company who has a top heel, but he's a guy that you totally expect to see like at the restaurant afterwards, just laughing and smiling and being totally normal. Like, I don't buy that he doesn't, that he lives some sort of, you know, strange existence. I don't know, strange is a word, but like, he just comes across as a normal guy trying to act like a wrestling villain, you know, like a B movie would cast some villain heel to be in the wrestling match. That's part of the plot. So all that said, I, him talking and, you know, standing there with Lawler didn't seem like a break from that for me. But I think if anyone thought he was this vicious, unhinged killer, this would have changed their mind. If it hadn't before, this week would do it. Secondly, I'm sorry. If you back down from Ray and Dominic, you're not a killer heel destined for main events. You know, like, it's got to take a lot more than Ray and Dominic going, come on, get in here, and Veer going, well, there's one of me and two of you, so I think I'm going to retreat. So in a sense, this is the end of Veer as anything other than a guy who's going to, like, feud with Dominic. You know, like, I mean, it's just he's a mid-card heel. I don't think he can rise above this. Brandon, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this was a really bad night for him for a lot of the reasons that you've already mentioned, Wade. I was already thinking that they were going down the wrong path with him because, like you said, I mean, you really can't present a monster heel and then have it be a guy who just hangs around in the ring for, you know, sandwiched in between two commercial breaks and a backstage interview before you get to his segment. I don't think that people were really buying the squash matches, even though they you know, they did the best that they could to kind of give those opponents something for the audience to sink their teeth into and maybe get behind a little bit. It just feels like he is playing a character. It doesn't feel natural at all. It doesn't seem to fit him. It seems shoehorned. Wade, I think you hit the nail on the head with saying that it sort of feels like a B action movie villain, where it's just so clear that this guy does not fit the role that he's been cast in, and it's just, it's going downhill quickly, and the cracks are starting to show at a pretty alarming rate. I thought that his promo work tonight was a step in the wrong direction, but more than anything, I thought that having him stand in the ring with Jerry Lawler and not really appear to be that much bigger than him, if anything, he actually seemed less bulky than Lawler. That went a long way in sort of ruining any of the mystique that I saw left in him, because it's not like Lawler is up as this big big guy. So to have him standing with Waller and to not really seem all that much difference in size, it just really kind of took away the shine. And couple that with, like you said, Wade, the running away from the Mysterios, who have not at all been presented in a way that would make you think that they are or should be a threat to Veer. I thought this just was kind of disastrous for him all the way around.
And the character is so just one-dimensional cardboard. Like, I want it to be, like, surprise. I don't know. If he's not going to be good at being that vicious, like, I'll point people to, like, early 80s, Sheik Adnan El-KC in the AWA, because that's when I was a little kid watching wrestling, and I was scared to death of that guy. And he came in as a heel and took on Nick Bockwinkel, who was the top heel in the territory in the company, and he turned Bockwinkel babyface. The fans were like, well, don't let this guy take the AW title back to the Middle East. And he was scary, and he was believably scary. And if you go watch, YouTube Sheik Adnan El-KC, AWA Nick Bockwinkel, it's like that is three levels better than what Veer is doing. And I graded against that. There's many other examples, over the years, and not just the territory system, but even more modern wrestling, where there's somebody who's just more believable as being unhinged. I think Veer's miscast. I think they looked at him and they typecast him in a way that doesn't actually fit his facial expressions, as you point out, Brandon, his actual size. He doesn't seem all that tough. He's not like Meng. Meng seemed tough. Veer looks like a guy pretending to be tough who's, I'm not saying in real life he's not tough. I don't know either way. I'm just saying as a professional wrestler, his moves don't look that special. He doesn't seem that just like, I don't know, freakishly strong or vicious. So everything just feels like he's kind of pretending. And so my point was, is this was an opportunity, I think, for WWE to introduce something different about him, add a dimension that takes him out of that cardboard cutout, one-dimensional heel that I think he's sort of like, I don't know, Killer Cross, Karrion Kross. It's just like, Karrion Kross was a snarl that he didn't, just B level acting. I didn't buy it. I didn't think he was good in NXT, and I thought he'd get exposed on the main roster. And there's wrestlers with opinions I respect who absolutely called it. I was critical of him before that. I wasn't just saying what they were saying. But I had wrestlers who I talked to when he got up to the main roster, and like he's no one's going to want to work with him up here because he can't take bumps. And you got to be able to sell for people, even as a killer heel. And other things. His promos weren't good. So with Veer, there's similarities there where I think you look at him and you go, there's just not enough there. Anyway, sorry, Veer. I think the writing has let him down. I think I think he's talented. I think he's like, has a good look, but it's just, he's cast incorrectly. Like he's being cast as something that he's not capable of being, both in ring style promos and size and look. And I would have liked this opportunity. This was an opportunity with Lawler to add something to his character, unexpected, or for him to shine in a new situation, and neither happened. Okay, William, I'll throw back to you for any follow-up on that.
Yes, it's a loud car drives by. I also want to talk about my – yeah, exactly. I also want to talk about my actual favorite segment, not that I didn't get a kick out of the whole Jimmy Smith thing, but I really, really like that opening promo from Matt Riddle. He like actually got me like wondering, whoa, is like Randy hurt? Like, did he suffer like a career-ending injury or like what happened? I haven't heard anything about that. I'm hoping and optimistic that he's okay. I think he's okay, but yeah, it's just. A credit to how well he sold the whole thing. And it's just, I think it's brilliant that they're kind of pinning this whole thing as Roman Reigns and the Bloodline and then RK-Bro, this super beloved tag team, fan favorite tag team has come to an end because of the Bloodline. And that just puts so much heat on them. And I feel like that's one thing that Roman has been missing for, honestly, probably since it started with him, since the whole run started, this current run started, and like he's had a lot of entertaining matches and opponents, but I've never felt this way. Like there's like finally someone that I want to root for them to beat, be the ones to beat Roman. Not to say that like guys like Brock weren't entertaining, or you know that I would have hated it if they were the ones to beat Roman. But with this, like, I'm actually invested in their journey and in them hopefully getting a chance to, you know, to finally shut down Roman and the Bloodline. And I know some people complain about, like, the dopey nature of Riddle, and they will say, like, this just proves the point that this is who Matt Riddle should be. But I think the reason why it works so well is because up to this point, Matt Riddle has been that kind of dopey, happy-go-lucky guy, and it just accentuates like the seriousness of the situation when he like drops the act for a minute and it goes serious and goes like, "Yeah, I'm not feeling too well after you know what happened last week." It kind of takes you back and go like, "Oh man, like this is serious."
Yeah. So,
I don't know. I threw a bunch up at you guys.
Yeah, let me throw to Brandon on that. Were you having a similar reaction as William? Like, man, Riddle's selling me on the idea that this could be something more serious than has been reported.
Yeah, so I thought it was a good night for Riddle. I thought that he did a good job sort of conveying a wide array of emotion, which is not something that he is typically all that great at doing. And while I don't think Riddle in general is a great promo, I thought tonight went a long way in sort of establishing him as a potential challenger for Roman Reigns in the future. Of course, you know, given reporting recently, it seems like that's the road that they're headed down. And I think this was really the first step to get them there. I'm not sure that I can get to a point where I take him as a legitimate threat to Reigns' title run, but that doesn't mean that I can't enjoy the ride on the way to the match itself. And I thought tonight did a good job of establishing that. And I do think that he did do a solid job at selling the potential injury to Randy. Although the one thing that I will note is that the idea seemed to be that they were selling that Orton was injured during the match with the Usos and is now hurt as a result of their attack. But he did open the promo by saying that Randy had been suffering some back trouble for the last couple of years. So I don't know if that was a gaffe or more just Riddle trying to sort of add some more fuel to the fire, say that, you know, that Randy had this existing issue and the attack exacerbated it and has officially put him on the shelf. That's likely what he was going for. But yeah, I thought it was a good night for Riddle overall. And I do think, too, that, you know, if Orton is not, in fact, injured and they're just giving him some time away before they bring him in for a program with Reigns, I do think they're kind of missing an opportunity here where they do only currently have one Hell in a Cell match scheduled on the card officially. And given how hot the feud with the Usos and Orton and Riddle has been, that could have been a heck of a tag match in Hell in a Cell. And unlike a lot of the Hell in a Cell matches that they book for this, you know, sort of like it's that time of the month, it's that time of the year, so we've got to book Hell in a Cell matches. This has a lot behind it. I mean, it's a serious, legitimate blood feud that could actually make proper use of the cell.
Yeah. By the way, I did replay the Lashley. The background and Corey waving his hands like no go, and then Jimmy Smith looking at him with a thumbs up, brother, like, you know, we're sorry, yep, I gotcha, don't lay down too thick. I don't know what's going on in his head. So yeah, I thought Riddle had a good night too. And I think Randy's getting some well-deserved time off, and this totally fits the post-match attack. But I haven't seen reports, and I haven't had a chance to ask yet if there's something more to it where, you know, there was something that needed like some surgery where he needed time off. I as people know who listen to me enough, I'm not a fan of show off reporting where somebody says, guess what I've heard? Here's the next four opponents for Roman Reigns over the next 5 months. Like, there's going to be so many storylines that are going to make you like, there's going to be a match or a big announcement. And I want to watch that play out in real time. I don't want to know what happens at the end of, at the end of a TV series on Netflix I'm watching either. Let me watch it play out in real time, especially if it hasn't dropped yet, as in the case of wrestling. So part of me doesn't – I mean, I want to know if Randy's hurt or not, but I don't want to know for sure that this is all an angle to set up Randy against Roman at SummerSlam one-on-one. But it very well could be. So I say all that being I'm not a fan of knowing ahead of time, because this is an example of where the average fan – and the average fan is, you know, has access to information. You want people to wonder what's going on here, and not just have it locked down that, oh yeah, this is all an angle to set something up down the line. But that's what it felt like to me. But it absolutely was a really good emotion, a display of unusual emotions from Riddle that pulled you into the story and pulled you into or real life, you know, whatever it is. They made you think something's up, and Riddle's really affected by this. And I thought it was a window into Riddle's ability to have a more wide-ranging character, and not just, you know, Brandon, yeah, and William, both of you. It's just like, yeah, I mean, I called Jimmy Smith dopey earlier, but, you know, Riddle's character is kind of a lovable dope, you know, dopey but lovable. This felt like somebody who really sincerely has an affection and respect for Randy and was worried for him. Not everybody can pull that off. And Riddle did, and I think it's a confidence booster if Vince McMahon is looking at him as someone who, you know, over the next couple of years, he could see, you know, carrying a world title on one of the brands, or the Unified title if it stays Unified.
I want to note, too, I had seen some chatter on Twitter about the idea that, you know, eventually Orton and Riddle will split up, and part of me hopes that they just, you know, kind of go their separate ways, but this is WWE and they often choose to do a dramatic breakup one way or the other. So I think that general consensus appears to be that Randy Orton is bound to turn heel on Riddle, and that, you know, Riddle is going to receive a huge reaction from the crowd for that just out of pure sympathy. And I'm inclined to think that it needs to go the other way, just given how over Randy Orton has become with this gimmick. To me, Riddle turning on Orton is going to be the way to go, only because if they're going to do a turn, only because I don't think Riddle is going to get cheered against Randy Orton at this point. I just think that he is the most over male act that they have in that company right now on the babyface side.
For how many years has Randy been a heel and the fans have cheered him? He's got a cool finisher.
Yeah.
He's a legacy guy. And that was when he was, you know, if you listen to archive shows from 5 and 10 years ago, it's like, oh God, Randy's in the main events and he's going through the motions and it doesn't seem like he has passion. And he was still cheered because he's like, he's the guy people have watched. He's the opposite of the part-time star who went off to do other things. Like, he's a top guy. He's not a top guy, but he's a top guy who's always been around. And he's done plenty of things, as he has talked about, to make people go, well, what's wrong with this guy? But I think people think he's matured, and I think they buy into the idea that he's having the most fun he's ever had in his career. You know, it mm-hmm. seems self-evident that that's true. And that he's matured and grown up. So, yeah, I don't think you can get people to boo him. We talked about this on The Fix last week and ran a poll on Twitter, and it was close to a 50-50 split, 45-55 or something, in terms of whether people think Orton or Riddle will turn. And so I think the new money is on Riddle. The old money is on Orton. But it's not, you know, people are thinking of both possibilities. It is a lost opportunity if you don't break them up. But I'm just not convinced that the best role for Orton and Riddle isn't as singles baby faces. I don't know that Riddle turning heel is the right way to go, and I don't think it'll work if they turn Orton. So, I mean, I get the arguments for Riddle going heel, and maybe tonight shows there's something in there that'll just, you know, be next level than you know, that Riddle sort of, you know, because he's been kind of dopey and he hasn't been portrayed as unbeatable. Maybe he needs to go heel in order to kind of take things to another level and show another side of himself so that then he can eventually be a babyface. But he's not 27. You know, he's deep into his 30s. So I don't know. That's a tough choice.
I also don't know that I trust WWE with the nuance that's going to be required to have Riddle explain why he would turn on Orton and make it make sense. Because, I mean, the guy is just over the moon with the idea that Randy Orton is his legitimate friend. that it's going to be so hard to get the audience to buy that. And it could even go in the direction that the crowd just isn't into it because they have no interest in booing either guy. It's one of those deals where, I mean, I would prefer that if they need these two as singles acts, and by all indications they very well may, that they just go their separate ways.
Yeah. I was trying to look up our poll here to get our final tally on that because we're probably pretty much near the final tally. I'm going to scroll a little bit more here and see if I can find it because I know I'm close. Okay, that's not it. That's a different poll. Hang with me, everybody. Maybe I scrolled past it. All right, anyway, William, I'll throw back to you, and I'll keep scrolling and looking for this. Go ahead.
Yeah, I used to be of the camp that maybe Riddle would have to turn on Orton or something to, like, gain a new character or seem more like a credible contender. But I think after tonight actually swayed me into thinking that they should just be singles guys, baby faces who just, you know, break up amicably, maybe in like a bittersweet way where they just have like a, I don't know, like a, like an RK-Bro celebration in the ring where they, you know, talk in front of the fans and they kind of break it to everyone that, you know, mom and dad are breaking up, but it's not, you know, they still love each other, but they just have to go their separate ways. And it's kind of sad, but kind of, you know, a little bit maybe optimistic in that it's an opportunity for the both of them to go in different directions and do stuff as single competitors. And
I think the way to do that is in the draft.
Yeah.
You know, then you don't even have to have it be a voluntary. You know, it's not mom and dad choosing to break up. It's just there's a job transfer, but they don't want to transfer the kids. So, you know, one of the parents is going to go live in another state for a while because the kids, you know, they want to keep the kids in the same school district. And that, whatever. I mean, you get what I'm saying. So
and then they can have a reunion 3 weeks later at Survivor Series.
You know, Survivor Series is the only – Brad, I don't know if you heard this, but Survivor Series is the only time a year that you can see Raw superstars and SmackDown superstars against each other in the ring at the same time.
I didn't know. You know, Wade, here's the thing. Survivor Series is going to be in Boston this year, which is the closest major market to me, the only place that I can go, you know, within reasonable distance for pay-per-view events. And in the past, I would always drive down to Boston for a WWE pay-per-view. And in fact, I had, in the summer of 2020, spent a very good chunk of money on 4-day passes for SummerSlam in Boston, which was going to be SummerSlam and Raw and SmackDown and NXT, and I was very much looking forward to that trip. And the second Survivor Series got announced, I looked at it and was like, no thanks.
Yep. All right, very good. William, back to you for any closing words. I feel bad if we've left our other callers on hold so long here, but you've been starting good conversations here.
No worries. That's actually a good segue into another topic that I thought about maybe bringing up, but I wasn't sure. But I just feel like I can't really take the draft seriously at all anymore. Last week we saw Humberto and Angel Garza on Raw without any explanation. And then tonight we saw Sami Zayn on Raw without any real explanation.
Yep.
At least before they used to make up BS excuses like the Brandon Brandt Invitational or the wild card rule, but they don't really even bother anymore. People just show up on any show they want. And it's like no explanation. It doesn't matter why they're here. Don't ask questions. And no one, I don't think anyone like cares at this point anymore. Like not even people who watch. It's just like, yeah, I guess they don't really have that many stars anymore. So they kind of have to do it. So, you know, they could break them up in the draft, but I mean, the draft, they're just going to, like Brandon said, they're just going to see each other at Survivor Series a few weeks later. So, you know, who cares? I guess that's all I had to say. Thank you guys for taking my call.
Cool. Yep. Thanks. Brandon, anything you want to add to that?
I was just going to say that it at least makes sense that the Usos would be there now that they are the undisputed tag team champions. But, yeah, absolutely right that Sami Zayn has no reason to appear. I mean, and they don't care, yeah. And they won't care for the rest of the summer. And then around September when they have to start thinking about the draft, suddenly it'll matter again.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, William. All right. Our number, if you want to join the show midstream here, is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. We're live after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you can find the show at WadeKellerPostShow.com and navigate to the link. That's WadeKellerPostShow.com. Or you can find the direct link to the live stream on Twitter at PWTorch and also in my TV reports at PWTorch.com. All right, we got a call from, I believe, Los Angeles, Erico, 213. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, state your name and what city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, this is Rob from L.A.
Hey, Rob, good to hear from you. What do you think of Raw tonight? What's
your
mind? Yeah, for sure.
I got through most of the first hour, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that Alexa Bliss promo and match. Did that feel kind of weird to you, like, I'm like one of those
yeah.
weird people who actually listens. I'm like one of those weird people who listens when people talk. And, like, it just seemed like she said, like, oh, you know, Alexa, how does it feel to be back? Oh, well, I'm friends with a doll. I just want to be myself. Uh-huh. And Nikki dresses kind of weird. So let's go wrestle. And then her music hit. And she just kind of, like, wandered out. And then, like, did her moves that she does. And Corey Graves was even like, she's kind of going through the motions. And then she won, and then it was over, and then that was it. And I'm like, what was that? Like, was that weird to you guys, too?
In my TV report, the word I used was, or the phrase I used was, that was weird. So we're totally on the same page, Rob. I have documented proof. Yeah, I didn't know what to make of that. I mean, you had, you know, hey, it's nice to be in the ring with Nikki again because I have a doll, and she dresses like a superhero. And I know that sounds weird to say, but whatever. And then Corey's like, she just doesn't seem all that engaged. And then she won. And then Saxon's like, well, she turned it up when she had to. And Graves was like, yeah, I guess she did. Brandon, can you do you know what's going on?
I mean, I watched that backstage promo, and I was just thinking, like, this is Lexi Kaufman. This isn't Alexa Bliss. Like, she's just talking.
Exactly.
Like, she's just like venting her frustration about the fact that she's been ready and just kept off TV for months and months, and now she's back, and her character makes no sense, and she knows it makes no sense, and she's just going to say it. Like, it was strange, and it she's absolutely right. I mean, she's carrying this doll to the ring, but she's not at all possessed by it anymore. The doll is not possessed in any way. There's zero reason for her to have the Lily doll except that they want to sell Lily dolls. So when that is all you're attempting to do, how do you work it into a character that is just a girl again? It makes no sense. And Bliss is too smart for it. She's too talented for it. I don't know. I mean, like, that promo was certainly, you know, Lexi Kaufman being Lexi Kaufman. But with that being said, she's also such an effective promo that she made you believe, like, either she made you believe one way or the other that it was her, because she's very, very good. But they're not giving her anything to work with.
It felt like she, like, got there late, and she's like, I didn't even have time to look at the script. And they just said, you know, they just said, Alexa, just get out there and just say something. And she's like, really? And she's like, okay. I mean, yeah, I don't – maybe they're planting seeds for something, or maybe we're just not getting it.
She has been – she's been vocal about her frustration on Twitter. Yeah. I mean, she very clearly was not pleased with the way that she was brought in for the Saudi pay-per-view and then just unceremoniously dumped from TV for another 2 months and then brought back with seemingly no direction. I mean, she was actively responding to fans who were wondering where she was, and it was very, very passive-aggressive toward the company. So, like, something's going on there.
Rob, back to you.
It's very odd, and it's just, you know, it kind of goes with the territory nowadays. I think I grew up in like the mid 80s, early 90s, and you heard a lot of stuff about a lot of people back in the day. And I feel like now most of the scoop and the gossip centers around just people being just generally miserable. So I hope that gets better in one form or fashion. Like, at least they're not doing prescription pills anymore, you know, and like, assaulting
right.
people, so that's a step up. But it just seems like everybody in different ways for different reasons are unhappy. And even the people like Seth Rollins who are out there like on the front lines like, no, it's not that bad. They're not saying it's great. They're just saying it's not as bad as these people are saying it is. You know, like, so there's something there. I don't know what it is, but that's not for me to know or say. But I guess the last thing I would just want to say is I work in TV and film production. Regardless of how you feel about the content of WWE shows, you guys kind of hit on it earlier, I just feel like they would be so much more effective even if people, like, take every single segment of the show, every single talent, leave it in there. Don't take anything out. Don't change anything. But just rearrange the order in which they show them to us, the fans, and like move those commercial breaks around. And I think the show would be like way more enjoyable, way more pleasant. I just so happened to be off. I'm like watching the first, you know, 5 minutes of Raw. I flipped over to something else. I come back at like 20 minutes later and they're just doing the intros for Riddle's partner, not even the, and I'm just like, oh my God, like what's been happening this whole time? And like, I think in their mind, if they tease you in between, if you don't like what's on right now, you'll stick around for that. But in my mind, all you're doing is just prolonging the things that people aren't liking. You're just making it longer. like if all their segments were just more succinct and just more encapsulated all on their own, you wouldn't have to be teasing the next thing in the middle of this thing. And like you guys mentioned earlier, somebody's literally standing there in real time for like 45 minutes. So that's it. That's all I got. I only watched like an hour, hour and a half of it, but love to hear what you guys think.
Brandon, talk about that.
They genuinely seem like it's like an inside office joke about how long they can keep someone in the ring before they go back to them. Like how long can we, 1 week it was Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch. It was like, all right, let's get the couple in there and see who we can make stand in the ring during a commercial break longer. And it's gotten to a point where they'll stretch it out so far sometimes that I forget that someone came out. So like they come back.
I worry they forget. I sometimes think they forget that someone's in the ring, and they just go about doing their show and video package and announcers are talking, and then suddenly it's like, oh, crap, Cody's still in the ring. We got to go do a match. So go ahead.
Yeah, and it for the live audience, it has to take away some of the luster around these acts, especially heels who are unlikely to you know, chat with the fans and whatnot. I mean, maybe some of them jaw with the fans and talk trash like they would at a house show, but when I have been in person, now granted, I haven't been to a WWE TV taping in a while, and when the last time I went, they were doing it, but nowhere near to this extent. So it didn't come off nearly as egregious. But, you know, they would more or less just stand in the corner and maybe chat with the referee a bit. So if that's all that's happening, man, it's so emasculating. Like, they're just props.
I get the strategy. I get our complaints are valid. I also understand why they do it. You know, I mean, the show is they used to do things that were sort of subtle about how they do format, you know, format the show and kind of keep you tuned in and make sure that, you know, when they, you know, go to a video package as well, Charlotte standing in the ring to cutting a promo and then they'll just cut away and show a video package. But, oh, Charlotte's in the ring, so this isn't really just a video package. It's the middle of a promo I want to watch. Like, they have all these things they do now, but you can do it to a point where it just becomes really obvious. And it is it's that emasculating part. It's not as bad as when all the wrestlers line up on the stage dutifully while Stephanie McMahon and Triple H talk to them. But format-wise, it is weird. And a lot of people go to these shows and they watch these wrestlers just sort of act as, you know, wrestlers in a play, wrestlers in a TV show, standing on the spot where they're supposed to stand and waiting dutifully. And I get that there is a benefit to, oh, Cody's match is next. And you then fit in some other stuff that if you did it before Cody's entrance, maybe you lose a lot of viewers. But because it sort of feels like Cody's match is almost in progress, the rationale is psychologically, oh, people will stick around because we're just sort of sneaking, wedging a couple things in before the bell rings. And that's the psychology. But if the end result is wrestlers feel like they're all just doing what they're told and standing around waiting for the next order, it undercuts. I don't think WWE wants to seem like all wrestlers are outlaws, but I think they do want, I think it would behoove them to not make them seem so much like scripted corporate robots just going about exactly what they're going to do. That doesn't mean that all wrestlers get to decide that they want to overrule Vince McMahon's ideas for creative, or they're going to walk out, you know, in the opening minutes of a show, like, you know, Sasha and Naomi did last week. I know that's a manifestation of frustrations that a lot of wrestlers share with them, but you can't set the precedent that wrestlers just get to walk out on a show if they disagree with Vince's plans. I mean, it's Vince's company, and there's, you know, as one wrestler told me earlier today, management is usually wrong, but they're not wrong here. Like, you know, this it's a situation. Well, now I'm going off on this other topic, but it's a situation where you can't just not, you know, react to that in some form or fashion. We can get into the nuance of how they did it, but there is something to be said for like a good middle ground between walking out on the show in progress because you disagree with what the booking plans are, and coming across on television like you're just there to do exactly what you're told. It works for some characters. You know, Drew McIntyre's gimmick is he's a company guy. I don't think it's great for him, but it doesn't destroy him. But other wrestlers, it does. And that format, you know, especially if you don't watch Raw a lot, it's jarring. But when you watch it a lot, it sort of feels – I think it ends up feeling too formulaic. Brandon, anything you want to add before I throw it back to Rob?
Yeah, I would just add that they don't do this to Roman Reigns. They don't put Roman Reigns in the ring – and then cut to commercial or cut to promo or cut to video package or cut to announcers talking. Like, Roman Reigns gets dedicated screen time. He gets his long entrance. He gets to stand there, soak up the crowd, and then he talks or does whatever Roman Reigns is going to do. And I think that is by design, because they have to know that part of the reason that Roman Reigns has been as successful for them as he has been is because they treat him like a star. And if they treated other wrestlers like stars, I think they'd be in a much better position. And by treating them like stars, I don't think you'd leave them in the ring for 13 minutes.
I will throw back to Rob for a follow-up on that or anything else you want to add. I think he actually signed off, if I remember right. But Rob, anything else you want to add?
Oh, no.
All right, cool. Oh, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, regardless of how you feel about which side you're on when it comes to the workers or the company, and it kind of boils down to that in my mind, I just think that people don't realize that wrestling, just like a lot of things that I do, it's a creative medium. So if you're telling creative people, go out there, take this stuff on the page and make it better than it is, but you have no feedback, you have no input, and we want you to do it just like this, that's not really a symbiotic relationship. And it's very easy to look at two people who have been outspoken in the past and say, here they go again. But I think that in a creative space, you have to have some creative input, or I'm just doing what you're telling me to do. Because I think a lot of times people take for granted the thing that they planned, oftentimes in my job, the thing that we planned is not as funny as the thing that actually happened, or as good as the thing that actually happened. So it's easy to say, be a professional and do your job. It's harder to have that nuanced conversation of, well, my job is to make this better, but you don't like any of my ideas, so you can't tell me that I'm doing a bad job. You know, it's nuanced. So whatever side you're on, I just wish more people would look at the nuances of it all. But that's all I got.
Cool. Yeah, thanks, Rob. Appreciate that. Brandon, anything you want to add to that?
I think it's a great point.
Yeah. All right, very good. Let's go next to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, how are you holding up? What's going on?
I'm good. I just wanted to talk about the main event with who was it? It was Becky and and so I thought, kind of like I said last week, I was hoping that Becky would get added, and she did. It was great. Here's my problem with this entire little thing with Bianca. I think I mentioned this a little bit last week. Bianca, to me, has been kind of cold, kind of a little bit boring ever since she defeated Sonya, like whatever that was a while ago. It's like she's ever since then, she hasn't really done anything interesting. It's been about Becky and the only women's match that out or feuds I'm into is Rhea and Liv and Becky and Asuka, which is odd because Bianca's the champion, but she's not. Doesn't feel like important right now. And the pay-per-view is in 2 weeks, and now that Becky got added, which is great, I feel like that. It's just like Bianca's the third wheel. So what? I know that Bianca gets great reactions, and that's all well and good, but she's not really doing anything interesting as a character and as a person who's supposed to be in a storyline with Asuka at the beginning and now, but it's about really Becky and Asuka. Where is that going? Because to me, it feels like Bianca's so cool. She's kind of directionless of the situation with her. So what do you think about that?
I was a little surprised they didn't put her on commentary, because I think Kyle's making a good point that Belair doesn't feel – I mean, we have to have short memories to not realize there is, you know, history with Becky and Bianca, of course. But I want to know what she thinks of Asuka being back. I want to know what she thinks of the prospects of a triple threat. I want to know what she thinks of a one-on-one match. I wanted her reaction and, you know, even though it wouldn't be practical with her getting kicked and selling that to the finish, they didn't give us really that. They didn't give us that at all. And – it does seem like Belair is just sort of the champion off to the side, and they don't have like 3 weeks to tell this story, Brandon.
Yeah, I don't agree that Belair feels like a third wheel in the match. I do think that Asuka and Becky aren't really in sort of a blood feud or anything. They're just battling over the opportunity to face the champion. So in that respect, Bianca is still in the forefront there. But I do very much agree that she has sort of been cast to the side in terms of presentation as champion since winning the title. I mean, she wasn't featured on WrestleMania Backlash. They had the six woman tag to close the Go Home Raw before that pay-per-view, or premium live event. So she hasn't really been a focal point on the shows in general, and I think that's really a missed opportunity given how thin the roster is on both Raw and SmackDown. Raw could certainly use her in a prominent position without the likes of Brock Lesnar and now Randy Orton. So, yeah, I think that they need to be doing more with her, and they don't have time to really heat this triple threat matchup. I would hope that she's going to get some promo time next week and the go home show to kind of talk about what she thinks about Asuka's return and what she thinks about Becky being added to the match. But yeah, this has really been Becky's story. I mean, even Asuka who, you know, earned the opportunity first, it's really been about Becky and her slow decline into madness before finally getting the win back to get into the match. I will add, though, as much as I do think that they're fighting an uphill battle with Becky Lynch as a heel, her commitment and dedication is just incredible. I loved the fact that she either hasn't washed her hair in a week or she made sure to have them, you know, put the dye in her hair again so that you could still see it. I mean, she just checks all the little boxes and all the little details. She's fantastic.
Oh, good point. When she's just wandering in looking like she doesn't even know where she is, like, how did I end up here? And that she hasn't slept for a while and she's just lost. And I mean, yeah, it seems like everything that goes wrong, there's seven there's 6 days and, you know, 21 hours of just utter distraught chaos in her life that leads to her then wandering to Ron. It's a miracle she even makes it there to then express her dismay with how things went last week. So, yeah, I enjoy it. I enjoy her being all in, as you put it. Kyle, back to you.
Yeah, it's just I've enjoying Becky's kind of insane moments as his new character. I think it's been entertaining. She's no matter what she is, she's as entertaining forever what she does. I think that's also the problem with Bianca. She's not really doing anything interesting with her character. She says she's the EST of WWE, and then being and not and but lately again, like I said, she hasn't been doing anything. She is wants to make if she wants to be a serious. Champion in a lot of ways in terms of her as a character, she should be more like Becky in that respect of having be more interesting, or even also Rhea. I'll get to that now, I guess, too. I'm honestly loving what Edge is doing with this group, bringing in Rhea and Damian Priest. I think that's awesome having them doing something with both of them, because they were doing nothing for a while all through last year throughout them being kind of felt like both of them were lost, and now they're finally being together now as this group. I'm enjoying this, and then and bringing in also Liv and Balor and Styles into this as well. I think it's awesome that they have this other storyline with them, that, and I think it's a cool thing there. I think it's also amazing too how they're making Raw interesting without having a world champion as well, even though that still needs to be one, but they're still making it work. But anyway, I just think that all six people here have been fantastic. I'm a fan of all six people, and I think whenever they'll do this six person match, it'll be great. And I'm looking forward to seeing like Rhea feud with Bianca in the near future, if that has that money in the bank, or if they'll save that for. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking they'll do the one-on-one match between Becky and Bianca, money in the bank, and then they'll do Rhea and Bianca at SummerSlam. But what do you think about the trios from both sides with Priest and Edge and Rhea and Balor and all them?
I had mixed feelings on the Judgment Day promo. I appreciate that it's establishing their character, their dynamic. And you know, sometimes it's good to emphasize points, you know, 2 weeks in a row, you know, that they're making offers to others. But there's, you know, I felt like it also was needlessly long and even bordered on boring at times. But it's weird because even though it was needlessly long and boring, I thought it accomplished something in that they're really emphasizing the idea that, you know, they're not sheep. It's ironic in light of what happened with Sasha and Naomi that you have these wrestlers dutifully standing in the ring reading their script, you know, lecturing the wrestlers in the back on being sheep when, you know, but whatever. I mean, you can draw real-life fact versus fiction type irony a lot in WWE. But overall, I had mixed feelings on it. And I still do on the faction. I like Rhea Ripley being in this faction. I think Damian Priest was always missing something in everything they tried with him. So this is the latest attempt, and I think it's working well enough. So yeah, Brandon, I'm curious what you think. Cause you know, like I would rather have Edge as a baby face, and a lot of people would rather have Becky as a baby face, but we're like, well, Becky's all in and it's entertaining. Edge, I think is exposing himself in certain ways in this gimmick. So yeah, tell me what you think.
I hated it. I don't think it's good at all. I thought that it was derivative. I thought they were pulling from the same tired generic heel lines about, you know, you're lazy and you're just eating your Cheetos at your desk.
At your cubicle.
Your boss is making 10 times your salary because you don't, you know, you're too lazy to make that. Like, it's just the derivative stuff that Vince McMahon loves to have his heels say. It's so beneath Edge. I don't think that the latest iteration of Damian Priest is connecting or working. I mean, good for him. They weren't wanting him this week, but like, I guess that's a win. It's something for Rhea Ripley, sure, but I just don't think this act is getting over. I think it's embarrassing for Edge, ultimately. I actually think that this is way better for Liv Morgan, who gets to, you know, sort of be associated with AJ Styles and Finn Balor, who both look really cool in this feud, opposite of, you know, Edge and Damian Priest, who are doing this weird sort of, like, quasi dark order. Like I was talking to Zach and Frank on Twitter during the show, and I was just saying, like, this is dark order pretending to take them, like, taking themselves seriously. It just doesn't work for me at all. But yeah, I think it's great for Liv. I think that Liv is getting a great rub by being associated with Finn and AJ. I think the crowd thinks that them two sweeting each other is really cool. And you know what? It kind of is. Like, they're these two veterans who have been, you know, in the same place at different times and sort of running in the same circles at different times, and now they're working together as babyfaces, and they're bringing this young, impressionable talent in with them for the ride. I think it's great for Liv. But yeah, everything else, I'm not into it at all.
I think it is banal. I think it's like, if you're looking for, you know, how do you define banal? It's like, just watch Edge and his people. Like, and you know, he brought up Tom Brady. Okay. And then Michael Jordan. I'm like, that might be a little dated, but I don't want people to not realize he was the greatest of all time. And you know, like, or, you know, I mean, like, we should just stop referencing people because it was 25 years ago or whatever. And then it's Wayne Gretzky. And I know he's the great one and all that, but it, like, I worry with Edge sometimes. And that's why other people, this wouldn't concern me. But with him, he is starting to come across like the dad who's not cool anymore. And it's, I don't know that you want that to be in the scripting of your promo, that, you know, just name three contemporary greats and not the three name. Like, literally, if you tell someone who doesn't watch sports, name three great athletes in team sports, because, you know, Tiger Woods would be brought up otherwise. And it'd be Tom Brady, Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky. Like, that's the answer you'd probably get from, like, that would be the most common threesome if you said one from each, you know, each sport, from, you know, two, three sports. It just, so anyway, so you have that. Oh, good. Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, Edge is a big rock and roll guy. And I feel like there is a, there's sort of a comparison to be made there, where a lot of those bands, like in the 80s and 90s, a lot of the bands that I think Edge would identify with, that had really, really successful runs and were, for a time, you know, sort of at the peak of their craft, and maybe they weren't the most popular music in the world, but man, did they have a great little niche in their particular genre. And that was Edge, and that still was Edge even after his return. And then it's like, those bands, inevitably at some point, a lot of them feel like they didn't get the recognition that they deserve. So they go and they make a record that's really mainstream, or it, to relate it back to Edge a little bit more, they really go off the wall. They go super, super indie or eclectic, or maybe they go heavier. Whatever the case is, it's a complete departure from what they've done and what they've done so well. And it's because they feel like they're becoming derivative. And that record is inevitably poorly received by fans and usually critics alike. And then either the band just goes away, or they go back to making the stuff that they've always made. And that's not always a bad thing. Sometimes they were still making good music and there was no reason to change what they were doing. So this isn't like an indictment of reinventing yourself, because there's tons of wrestlers and bands that reinvent themselves completely on a regular basis. Look at Chris Jericho, another example of a guy who's into rock music. It kind of relates itself, but it feels to me like that's what Edge has done here. Like, he felt like he'd made six or seven records and was very successful, but he felt like he had become a derivative version of himself, and so he had to branch out and do something entirely different. And, like, he thinks it's really cool now, but when you talk to him two album cycles from now, he's going to be like, "Yeah, that wasn't really my best work. I was trying something, and it just didn't work."
Good analogy there. I will add the other thing about this promo that jumped out is how random his list of potential recruits was. Like, he starts off with the rumor of the week, Tommaso Ciampa, and it's like, well, we want to see that, so don't lead with that, because now it seems like it's not going to happen. He could totally use the boost. But it was just like, he was just all over the place with the, like he said, he went from Tommaso Ciampa to Corey Graves to Alexa Bliss. And then Drew McIntyre, and then he's very pleased with himself, and he said, but you didn't think I was going to say him. It's like, well, okay. You know, like, knock, knock, who's there? Nobody. Ha, bet you didn't think I was going to say that. Yeah, but it's not funny, and you wasted my time. Liv Morgan, Finn Balor, or AJ Styles. Like, it just, what? So, I don't know. Like I said, you know, but there's, anyway, go ahead, Kyle,
Now that you talk about it, I think the idea of the three of them is a cool visual because they're all three are great in the ring and usually are great on promos in general. It's just the way Edge has been doing this character lately hasn't been all that interesting in terms of that really understanding what his, you know, he has his issues of how people live, like such a, and he's like a goth type, he's like a deep, I don't know what he's trying to do. I kind of agree. It's kind of bizarre. I don't understand it, and it's just helping, like you said, Liv as a credible person and making Styles and Balor relevant again as top act. So in the mid cards top act a little bit. So I even if they want to have, because I really do, because I love Rhea as a heel, and I love all three wrestlers. That's the problem. They're my favorite people in this. I just think that if they want to do if the idea is to do Rhea and Bianca, Rhea has to change even more or do something different, or something needs to change if that's going to be the plan back for SummerSlam or big or whatever, because I can't honestly see – I was trying to envision the problems between Bianca and Rhea. I'm like, oh, God, I don't think you'll be good as them as people. I'm like – I think back to what happened at the beginning of the year when they had their match, their Gauntlet match, and it just, he was going to be the last person to enter the chamber. They had some good time with each other. So it was like, I remember that time, but it was going to be this version of Rhea against Bianca Belair for the championship for SummerSlam. It's like, oh God, I just think those problems are going to be terrible. So I hope they'll change that if that's the direction to go in, because I believe in Rhea in this heel role, but it's just decent change. But that's all I have for you, but thanks for the call.
Thanks, Kyle. Brandon, anything you want to respond to there on Kyle's closing words?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Rhea, given the way they're handling her right now and just the lack of heel challengers, I think it does make sense that she would be lined up for Bianca before too long, so long as they don't remove the title from her before then. And I do think it's going to be a bit of a tough sell. I mean, Rhea is going to have to step up in the promo aspect. And I think that the clash of styles on the mic is going to be a challenge, because if the way that they've taken this Judgment Day group so far continues in that Edge is really the mouthpiece, and, you know, Rhea and Damian both talk, but Edge is really carrying the crux of the message, then trying to picture Bianca against Edge on the mic, and I just don't see any situation where that turns out well. So I'm kind of questioning how that's gonna go over, but I guess we'll see.
All right, thanks, Kyle. Let's shift to some emails here to wrap up. Ed in High Desert, California. Good evening, Wade and Brandon. I'm not sure what happened, but once I saw the graphic for the Ford Center, apparently it's not located in any city or town, and I just got super annoyed. I'm not from the Midwest, but I do believe those that reside there are still people, and the cities and towns they live in exist. I just don't get it. It seems so small of WWE. It should be a selling point. They go to all cities, all towns, big and small around the country, bringing their product to the people. I totally agree. I was going to make a real big point of that. They were in Evansville, Indiana, and apparently that they don't have an NFL team. It's a city they're embarrassed to be in. It feels small time, but Ford Center, that sounds like it could be like in Detroit. So It was mentioned Ford Center. Later, though, they plugged that SmackDown. Maybe the graphics guy will be fired for this, but it said SmackDown this Friday in Little Rock, Arkansas. So I don't know if, you know, because our, you know, a semi-recent president was from there, that now counts as something worth mentioning. So it felt a little contradictory, but that habit, and people are new to the show, I pointed out when they do it, it's very small of WWE. And I think it's kind of shameful that they're snobs about, you know, big cosmopolitan NFL cities, and they leave out when they're in smaller southern or Midwest cities. So, or yeah.
It's just so stupid and petty, and it doesn't – it's counterproductive because, I'm looking at – I was curious what the capacity of the venue was, and I'm looking at it right now, and it's a nice-looking arena. It's only, like, 10 years old. It's probably quite nice. I mean, it certainly looks nice on the outside. Like, why be embarrassed about that? I mean, like, if you're a major touring musical act, you know – You probably do an A market tour where you're hitting the big cities, but inevitably, if you're successful on that tour, you're likely going to book a B market tour, and you're going to hit cities like Evansville. And I don't think you're going to be embarrassed to play there. Like, you're going to be excited that you can pack a building in flyover country. Like, there's no reason to be embarrassed about visiting these cities. I'm on the Wikipedia page for the Ford Center in Evansville right now, and in their very first year of operation, they had Elton John. Like, you think Elton John, like, refused to say the city of Evansville when he was there? I mean, it's ridiculous.
It is. And they should be called out for it. And it's just not an oversight. It's somebody in WWE being a snob. And I don't buy that there's even a good business reason to do it. They should be celebrating and hanging a lantern on it, as they say, like that they go everywhere. And their fan base would love it if they thought their city was going to get some national attention when Raw or SmackDown came there. So anyway,
there's no good reason to do it. There's nothing that makes there's no reason that it would make sense, especially when you consider, like, okay, next week they're going to be in Des Moines, but SmackDown is going to be in Columbus, and then they're in Green Bay. Like, it's not like I could understand if business was down and they were exclusively touring small cities and small arenas.
Right.
But
yep.
the issue that they're purporting to have goes out the window when in 2 weeks you're going to be back in an A market.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So Ed also says, while still annoyed, I see Riddle walking down the ring as if he was loving life and happy as could be. I didn't get why he was there after the beating from Friday and didn't get the entrance, but kudos for his promo and the somber tone. After they went to the second commercial with the fighting before the match actually started, I stopped watching. Both WWE and AEW do an awful job with their commercials. AEW says picture in picture, but it's really split screen. Well, that's true. But it seems more and more hurting the flow. For WWE, their entrances, then commercials, and feeling like forever before the match actually starts makes it tough to watch. I'm curious, is this a WWE thing, something USA forces, or is this some sort of payback due to the lower viewership numbers? So I just think when you get two commercials relatively early in a show, it's just going to save you a commercial break later. You know, I mean, there's an average number of commercial minutes in talk radio and sports talk radio, and they try to spread them out, you know, on YouTube. If you don't have the membership, you know, with YouTube Premium, there's going to be ads that show up with this show if you listen free. There's ads that show up X number of minutes, you know, or, you know, X number of times over an hour. And it's just sort of the way, you know, they pay for what you're enjoying and watching. You know, it's vital for us, you know, I mean, it's just so, but there's an, you know, way to avoid it, you know, with our membership, in various ways too. And same with YouTube, or Hulu, you know, you can pay a premium and avoid the commercials. With Raw, you can't, but you know, you can have a DVR and start 20, 30, 40 minutes late and fast forward through it, which I'm sure people do. I don't really resent creative gimmicks to give them an excuse to go to a commercial. And the idea of a brawl before the match when Riddle has a legit grudge against the Usos after what happened Friday, and as order gets restored, we're going to take this opportunity to, you know, get one of our breaks out of the way. I just kind of wish they were more honest about it. Just go, like, say, use those words, you know. Well, we didn't plan to go to commercial. We plan to ring the bell. But you know what? Let's get another break out of the way. It'll give us a chance to air more of this match if it goes long. Like, just talk to us like people who understand commercials are part of, you know, it's what pays for a lot of the products that we have. And just be more honest about it instead of seeming like you're super clever and we're not even noticing. So I guess that would be my criticism or my wish list, to just be, though, to be actually acknowledged. You know, they use the euphemism, you know, the match continues. It's like, just say, no, we're going to a break. You know, like, just be honest with us. Don't try to gaslight us into thinking it's something that it's not, Brandon.
Yeah, they certainly could be better oftentimes with their placement of breaks. And they have the luxury of having a pre-booked, pre-written show where they can slot breaks where it makes the most sense. They don't have, like, the excuse of live sports, for example, where a football game does have some pre-planned breaks in there, but then you got to just be prepared on the fly if there's an injury or if there is a called timeout or a coach's challenge to throw to break, because that's when you have an opportunity and a break in the action to take a break. WWE doesn't have to be that up on their strategy. They just need to plan it a little better in the scripting. But when you're a company that, you know, is oftentimes rewriting the show 7 minutes before air, it's probably hard to do that.
Yeah, well, there is that for sure. All right, Ed adds, I agree with you on Judgment Day. The listing of who might join is pointless and does nothing for the group. Well, not a big deal. Does Rhea seem stronger joining Edge when she needs him to help her win a match? I mean, I think that the, you know, heels cheat, and hopefully the announcers aren't extinguishing the attempt to get heat by praising the heels for their ingenuity. But I think Rhea Ripley, this is fine for her. I mean, I think being associated with Edge elevates her, given where she was before this. I think WWE had their reasons for not just strapping a rocket to her like they did Bianca. I mean, she is young. She was genuinely overwhelmed when she got to the main roster. You know, I mean, this was a story about a human being who was overwhelmed behind the scenes, and WWE realizing they had to pull back on it. It was just too much pressure for her up front. You know, she people had different personalities, and she was used to the kind of college lead you by the hand NXT environment, and on the main roster, she was thrown off. So they decided to slow down a little bit. And, but by slowing down on it, it made her just kind of go into the flow of traffic and not seem like this fast rising star, and they didn't protect her. So this gives her something to do that I think ultimately is going to be a benefit on her path to, I still predict, being a main event centerpiece act on the main roster. Brandon, your thoughts?
Yeah, as down as I am on Judgment Day as a whole, I think that's a net positive for Rhea, only because she was just so lost prior to. I think even if I think that Judgment Day is a bad idea and a bad stable, and it's going to ultimately be a negative chapter in the legacy of Edge, I do think that the mere association with someone of Edge's caliber does elevate Rhea Ripley, even if I don't think the content itself is good. So I hope that she comes out strong on the other side of it, and I think that she definitely has the skills and the look to be a major player in that women's division, and they very much need her.
All right, let's see. Ed also says, I agree. Oops, sorry. Let's not forget, nobody on Raw cares about being world champ as another week goes by, and nothing. I hope you're okay, Wade. You must be devastated. Survivor Series was one time all year, just after many wrestlers switch rosters, was when we saw Raw versus SmackDown. But apparently now people just show up on whatever show, regardless of the brand. I'm a proponent of a hard brand split, but not particularly keen on the silliness of Survivor Series. Thanks for all the hard work. VIP content is great and fun. Well worth signing up for. Thank you, Ed. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. We'd love to have you as a member, and the commercial breaks go away. That's one big perk with VIP membership, along with many other things, exclusive podcasts, an unmatched library of contemporaneous coverage dating back to the late 1980s, and more, all compatible with popular podcast apps, including the native podcast app on iPhone. So check out details at PWTorch.com/GoVIP. And I appreciate your kind words, Ed. The hard brand split, I'm just in general for it, but I get with how thin their roster depth is, how shallow the roster depth is, I guess. why they feel the need to shake things up a little bit to keep things fresh. So they've sort of painted themselves in this corner where, I mean, they just don't have enough fresh matchups to fill, you know, 3 or 2 hours of these weekly TV shows. So they do this. They just sort of have some sort of storyline excuse. But again, they try to pretend it's not happening. And I guess I'd just rather have, you know, they had that rule that they forgot about, the, you know, superstar exception or whatever it was called, where they can float over to a brand and they would sort of reference it. It was like this weirdly worded thing that I don't think anybody understood. It was like championship contenders match. We'd say it because we think it sounded good, but no one really thought it through. I liked it better at least when they gave it a name. I don't like it when they are going to gaslight us come November and act like this is the first time this has happened. But, yeah, we covered that earlier. Anything you want to add, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, I wish that they would just keep a hard split if they're going to have a split at all. But we know that they just don't do that. They get bored every year. They relax the rules. They stop mentioning the arbitrary rule that they created to give themselves an out, and then it just becomes a free-for-all until they need to reference the draft again come October. So, yeah, I don't like it. I think it does treat the audience like they are unintelligent, which is an issue that they have quite regularly, but it is an issue that they created themselves by thinning the roster to such a dramatic extent. And I think that by combining the tag titles and combining the world titles, they have put themselves in a really precarious position, especially on Raw, where what was once a fairly deep roster is now a lot of people that have been subjected to 50-50 booking, and those who were really above that level are gone. I mean, Randy Orton is now off TV for even if it's a short absence, his star power certainly helped move that show along. Brock Lesnar is gone. Roman Reigns is appearing mostly on SmackDown, occasionally on Raw, but all indications seem to be that his schedule is going to be lightening up. And that is evidenced in the fact that it appears as though he won't be working Hell in a Cell. So with Reigns' schedule slowing down, Orton out, Lesnar gone, Drew McIntyre over on SmackDown, Seth Rollins very overexposed and not really positioned as a star, that leaves you with Cody Rhodes. And they're doing the work with Cody, and I think that they've done an admirable job so far. But we'll see when push really comes to shove, when Rhodes is really presented as that centerpiece act, because right now he's in this upper mid-card feud with Seth Rollins, and he usually is anchoring that 10 o'clock hour. We'll see when he needs to be opening the shows week in and week out, when he is in the quote-unquote Roman Reigns spot, how that goes over.
All right, let's move on to JB from Detroit. I think MVP may have actually turned babyface tonight because he said the truest thing of the Lashley Omos segment. It's clear that MVP did make Lashley. I noticed it tonight, especially, but Lashley's promos have been slowly regressing since MVP moved over to Omos, to the point that he comes across as generic and bland to me again, like for the first year he had when he returned to WWE. The sweetening of the crowd was apparent to me in the segment based on what I was hearing versus what I was seeing in the audience, even for the Bobby chant we got at the end of the segment. Ultimately, I don't think this feud is doing either wrestler or MVP, for that matter, any favors, and it's dragging on far too long. No one cares. Not any of the three are involved in this feud are in a better place than they were before WrestleMania. Honestly, I thought Lashley was getting a better babyface reaction when he was playing a heel with MVP because he was cool and had an edge. They need to get Lashley away from Omos as fast as they can while he still has some equity left and spend it on a feud with Roman to kill time until next year's Mania. Oh, and did you know that Omos is now the Nigerian monster? It was really clear enough to me despite the 20 times they hammered it home in that segment. And can we really have a monster heel without them having some foreign menace gimmick or a one-line description in today's WWE? At the moment, we have Gunther, Veer, and now Omos. As always, love the show, and go VIP. Thank you, JB. Yeah, Brandon, what do you think?
He nailed it. I thought it was a really bad night for Lashley, and I think that the cracks are showing there. I was not a big Bobby Lashley fan. I was not particularly interested in seeing him return to WWE. I thought that in that first year or so, my suspicions were proved largely correct, and I was as underwhelmed as I expected, I would be. And then he won me over with the heel turn and the major push with MVP by his side. And I wanted to believe that was, you know, Lashley's doing. And of course, in the ring, to some extent, of course, it certainly was. But from a character presentation and just an overall wrestler presentation, I think that MVP made that character. And I think that it's sort of been a quick backward slide for Lashley. And the Omos feud is doing him no favors. It's been bad from the start.
I wish they could just find a way to have Lashley be who he was in Hurt Business, but stand for something, you know, just stand for something better. He doesn't have to regress to this as a babyface. There's like a third choice. You can be a cool babyface.
Yeah. I said that the feud has been bad from the start. I'll walk that back, because there was one night. I thought that the first night, I was actually on the post show, I believe, with Zach for the Go Home WrestleMania show when they did the setup, and I thought that that was strong. I thought that it painted Omos in a good, you know, sort of scary light, and Lashley seemed like the babyface conqueror who was coming to kind of knock Omos down a peg, and I thought that it worked well, and I thought that having Lashley just beat Omos at WrestleMania worked well, because I just didn't see a whole lot in Omos. But since then, they've muddied the waters. They've gone back and forth. They've traded wins, and it's just been a very, very quick downward slope.
All right. We will go to Zach in Texas to wrap up the show here. Well, Vince is bad. Creative didn't force anyone to walk out at WWE tonight. So that's a plus, I suppose. Nobody was forced to walk out over, quote, bad creative. Getting a main event, you know, match against Ronda Rousey and having to lose is not bad creative. It's creative you disagree with. Come on. I mean, you can take different sides on this, but let's not phrase it as objectively, demonstratively bad creative. It's creative somebody, a wrestler, did not agree with and chose to walk out on. Anyway, we got to talk about Cody, though. WWE isn't actually doing anything all that interesting with, but they're milking his presence and the fact that he's a shiny new toy for everything it's worth. He's stuck in a feud with a cartoon villain, a cheap imitation of Mark Hamill's Joker at that. He wrestled The Miz for the second time in 2 months, which is nothing to be proud of. What happens to him once he beats Rollins? There's one unified title, and he's not among the list of people going around as Reigns' next opponent. It might be Royal Rumble next year before Cody gets near a title shot. What's he supposed to do until then except languish? Thank you, Zach. So it says something, I think, well, a little bit, that we haven't brought up Cody yet. Like, is he no longer the shiny new toy? Like, I've been leading podcasts, perhaps too often, with Cody Watch. And it's last week, the countdown to Cody, and what do you think of his promo, and where is he going, and how is he being portrayed, and how is the crowd reacting? And I'm not, like, bored with Cody at this point, bored of Cody, however it's supposed to be. But I just sort of feel like he's just sort of is what he is. Like, I think some of that intrigue is gone. Also, it wasn't a good match with Miz. I don't think Cody and Miz are a great matchup. I think they're I don't want to go so far as to say they have the same strengths and weaknesses, but they have some of the same weaknesses. And those can kind of be amplified, and I thought it was clunky. I did like Cody's backstage promo. It's what I've been an advocate for. Let Cody be the old-school wrestler in the back hall with a brick wall in the background as the interviewer asks him a question. He's sweaty and worked up and cuts a brief promo. And there's no meta. There's no pacing around. There's no meandering. Nothing grandiose. It's just a wrestler in the back whose emotions are spilling over. I thought that was a strength of him tonight. But the match wasn't great. And, you know, the Seth feud is going on a long time. And if Cody isn't on Reigns' radar, you know, I don't know that he's going to be headlining against Reigns at WrestleMania next year. I think they have bigger things in mind. No offense to Cody, former EVP, big free agent acquisition from AEW. I mean, he is all those things, but I don't think Cody's the A plan for Roman. Maybe he is that they can't get Rock, and maybe that's what they're, you know, holding out for. But, I mean, we aren't talking about Cody because I think we just saw, you know, par for the course Cody tonight, and it's cool. It's good, but it's I don't think it's compelling. I don't think it's a needle mover. Brandon, your thoughts.
I've been a little surprised by how quickly Cody has become acclimated to WWE presentation. And I don't mean that from the perspective of course, Cody was brought up in the WWE system, so he feels right at home. It makes sense. I mean that I thought that seeing a founder, an original member of AEW, someone who I thought would never go back to WWE for a very long time, I thought that it would take me longer to get used to seeing him back on WWE TV, and it has happened a lot more quickly than I anticipated. Even hearing the theme music has kind of worn off, and I thought that that would last a little while because that was a guy bringing in a theme that he had written, you know, for his journey outside of WWE, and he brings it in, and it's sort of surreal the first few times you hear it, but it's all become very polished and very much fitting into the weekly presentation of Raw. So I think that hurts him a little bit in the sense that he doesn't feel like the outsider who came home and is operating on a different playing field than the rest of the roster. He sort of feels like he's jumped into the lane with the rest of the roster. And I don't think that that is good for him. And I also still sort of question the necessity of having this lavish entrance every single week. I think it's fine to do it for big matches on the premium live events, and maybe even if he has a big match on Raw. But I think if Cody's going to be coming out sometimes multiple times in one night and getting this massive pyro treatment and all that stuff, it goes against what I think Cody Rhodes does best, which is, and even if he isn't, even if there are proclivities and sensibilities of Cody to lack self-awareness and go for the grandiose a little too frequently, I think that Cody is best when he comes off as a man of the people. Yep. And you can see that in, like, if you follow Cody on social media, he, since rejoining WWE, he's been doing this thing where he will post several pictures of house show stops and him interacting with fans.
Yeah.
And I think that is when Cody is seen in the most positive light. And they should be leaning more into that on television instead of the grandiose entrance and the pyro all the time. But I think that they want that star quality to stand out. And I think because it's so glamorized WWE, it's actually doing the opposite.
Yeah, it's a conundrum because Cody is grandiose and opulent and has a big ego and carries himself like a star with an ego and is unabashed and not trying to hide it. And yet there's this juxtaposition of him being totally comfortable around fans and loving to engage with them in ways that a lot of babyface wrestlers don't. And trying to figure out how to market that was a challenge for Cody and Tony Khan and AEW. And I think it is it continues to be a challenge for WWE. They can, you know, do the big grandiose ring entrance, and it makes Cody feel like a star. And I get doing that, and his ring gear is going to be just, you know, meticulous and elaborate. He's going to look like someone who puts thought into it. You know, it's not, you know, Kenny Omega rolling out of bed and pulling something out of a drawer that's wrinkled, like, you know, as world champion, like Cody is going to, you know, he had that gimmick, you know, where he did those skits and back in WWE, you know, a whole other era ago where it was like, you know, grooming tips. And it's like, that wasn't a work. That was just like, let's amplify something about Cody that he's passionate about, which is, you know, how long your eyelashes or eyebrows should be, how to put on shaving cream correctly, what kind of blade to use, like that stuff, you know, the right way to fold cufflinks, or I don't know. I mean, he thinks about all that stuff and WWE is showing you it, but they're not finding a way to make that endearing or not self-deprecating, but sort of like, hey, here's my thing. We all have our thing. This is my thing. But have him be like self-aware about it where fans go, okay, at least he kind of knows what he's doing, but he actually just still really likes being with fans. And that what you say, Brandon, about social media, is an important part of who he is, and it would be good for WWE to tell that story. In fact, I mean, I think they – it's not like it hasn't crossed their mind. I think having him return the belt to the kid, the weight belt to the kid, was a sign that that is in their head or it's in Cody's head. You know, his character is someone who, even while he's worried about his future with his knee injury and he's in pain, he's going to give that belt back to the kid. And I thought that was a good moment. That's why, like I say, I'm kind of surprised I haven't, you know, we haven't talked about Cody, but it's just, it's like another match with Miz, another angle with Seth, whatever. Nothing new, no big promo, but the belt to the kid and the backstage promo that was just short and to the point, actually I thought made it a good week for Cody, and those are things that I would build on if I were them, as I think the writing team and Vince try to figure out where Cody fits into their narrative structure.
I think WWE certainly, they must know, and I assume that they are going to capitalize on the fact that there really are few star wrestlers right now who I think handle the aspects of being a star wrestler better than Cody Rhodes in terms of fan interaction. I've been in situations at shows a few times during his, you know, pre-AEW, post original WWE run, where I was able to just kind of stand back and observe Cody and occasionally Brandy as well. And the thing that always struck me the most was how attentive he was to every single person that he spoke with. And you get that with a lot of baby faces with children, but I think there's also something to be said for how attentive and kind he typically is to adults, and how much he wants to engage and seems genuinely interested in people's stories. And that's an incredible babyface quality that you can cultivate and work with. And I think it's part of the reason that, despite not being the greatest in-ring worker and really not matching the style that AEW quickly became known for, that in the beginning, Cody was such a massive babyface for that company because he truly felt like he was one of the people. He didn't feel like a, you know, above you EVP, even if his gimmick may have suggested that, or his walk to the ring might have suggested that. If you approached Cody one-on-one and spoke to him, you know, just person to person, I think most people walked away from those interactions thinking, man, what a great guy.
Yeah. Yep. Well put. Brent, is there anything else on this show you want to bring up before we wrap up here?
Yeah, I wanted to mention one last thing that we didn't touch upon at all, and it actually relates back to Cody, and that was Seth Rollins. I thought that his backstage promo tonight was really good for the character that he's portraying right now. He had me, and then, of course, at the very end, he's got to throw the laugh in. And I was like, man, Seth, like, you had me the whole promo. I thought it was well-constructed. I thought it was concise, to the point. He drove home, you know, why this match is important to him and why Cody has gotten in his head. He seemed a little bit off, like, you know, this is really eating away at him. And then he has to throw in the maniacal laugh at the end, and it killed it.
Yeah, but he's going to do it. You know, I mean, that's like, it's not the Seth Rollins character if he doesn't laugh at the end, but it is, you know, it is his signature, but it is also limiting in that it makes him feel more, you know, two-dimensional than three-dimensional.
It also just felt so out of place because it wasn't the typical Seth Rollins promo where he's bragging about how conniving and cunning he is and how he's going to outsmart Cody Rhodes. It was actually reflective and more discussing how Cody has gotten in his head and how he can't stop thinking about preventing going 0-3. So it didn't make sense for him to do the laugh, and that's why it was even more jarring.
Yeah. No, I totally get what you're saying. And I mean, the him being expressing specifically why Cody is getting into his head. And, you know, they used to sing my song and now all I hear is Cody and you know, it makes me ill and the countdown clock. So I get that. It makes sense. You're checking those boxes for why Cody drives Seth mad. What I fear is it can backfire. because they're drawing a lot of attention to the big pyro show and the countdown to Cody in a way where it's like fans are going to go, you know, I think they kind of have a point. Why does he get such a big entrance? Why is there a countdown clock? Like, I'm surprised WWE is scripting heels to point that out, because it is why AEW fans turned against him, and it's almost like WWE is daring WWE fans to turn against him or not turn against him. The other bad sign is when he said all, you know, they used to sing my song every night in every city, and now all I hear is Cody, Cody. So the fans started chanting Cody, Cody, and then it just petered out. Like, it was not strong. And so, you know, I get what they're trying to do. I don't think they should be pointing out, like, you know, his fireworks are too much and the countdown clock feels a little much. Like, because I think people are feeling that, but I don't think you want to articulate it. I think it's good for Seth to express why Cody's in his head, but I think the way they're going about it is dangerous. And I if the crowd is chanting Cody really loudly and drowning out Seth's interview, that's one thing. But the fact is they're still singing Seth's song. They're not chanting Cody. So this is sort of, again, like gaslighting, you know, oh, they're doing this. It's like, no, you want the fans to be chanting Cody and not singing your song. They're doing the opposite of what you're saying they're doing, and your reverse psychology might not work. In fact, the method of your reverse psychology might actually be exacerbating it.
Yeah, I'm really curious. They've gotten so Cody has been fresh up until it's the act, like we've been talking about, is sort of wearing off a little bit, but he's been fresh up to this point. And so we're going to get this one more match with Rollins, and I assume Cody's going to go over, and, you know, the crowd should still be mostly firmly behind him. But after that, that's when I wonder what happens, because we presume he's going to go to Money in the Bank, and there's going to be other wrestlers in Money in the Bank that people like. Are they going to be really into Cody and really excited if he wins, or are they going to be like, oh, man, I was really hoping X wrestler won? That's where I think we're going to start to see if there are cracks in the armor, or if, yep, you know, Cody is just a guy that they're into. He's just not the guy that they're into.
Yep. All right, cool. I'm glad you brought that up. We did not bring up Kevin Owens, Ezekiel, and Chad Gable. It came across the way they featured it tonight, like they didn't have a lot to do or losing interest in it, because we got that tail end Ezekiel ring entrance, no ring entrance for Chad Gable. 4-minute match with just a bunch of distractions and interference that I think you're better off saving instead of, you know, because they do too much of it. And it felt like, let's just pack in all our cliches that we overdo into a short 5-minute segment or 4-minute segment.
What do you think is the end game for the Ezekiel character?
I don't know. I'm worried they don't know. I mean, he could just be Ezekiel and just go wrestle. And they just, you know, every 18 months make a reference to Elias and sort of a, you know, make a wry reference to, oh, I wonder how Elias is doing. Or Ezekiel just says, oh, I just spent the holidays with my family. And for those wondering, Elias is doing well. He played his guitar in Christmas carols before we opened gifts. And that's it. And he just is Ezekiel.
I mean, I'm not a Elias fan. I never have been. So not having him around is not the worst thing for me.
Yeah.
I think Ezekiel is going to be short-lived in terms of fan interest, because at the end of the day, Ezekiel is just generic wrestler who is really Elias, and everyone knows it, but we won't admit it. Like, there's no gimmick there. It's just generic wrestler who is actually Elias. So
right,
there's only so long you can go with that. But I will say that Kevin Owens' work has been beneath him. I'll get that out of the way. Owens deserves better, should be doing something better. But he's been doing a fantastic job with this. And I loved his just the complete him being completely overwhelmed and incensed by that photo of Ezekiel and Elias together.
Yes, absolutely. Kevin Owens has been great. I mean, it's been fun, but you're right. The end game is very much in question. Cool. All right. Thank you, Brandon. Great having you on. How can people follow you on social media, and what do you talk about on social media?
Yeah, you can follow me at BLeClaire12 on social media, specifically Twitter. I talk wrestling and music and movies and some football and maybe a little NBA right now because the Celtics are making a deep playoff run, which I'm not typically a huge – I'm not like a diehard Celtics fan or anything, but it's cool to see them make a deep run here. So that's been a lot of fun, and I'll be covering AEW Double or Nothing this Sunday for the Torch and Hell in a Cell next week, so you can find my coverage on both the free side and the VIP side, and I'll probably also be putting some updates here as I move here in the next couple of weeks. We're going to be doing a lot of painting and getting all that ready, so I'm very excited to set up a quasi home theater in the living room, and I'll probably want to show that off when it's done. So
nice. Yeah, please do. Moving's fun. It's busy, it's discombobulating, but you'll always remember it.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, cool. Thanks, Brandon. People can follow me, by the way, on social media, on Twitter specifically at the Wade Keller, and you can follow our brand on Twitter at PWTorch, and of course visit our website pwtorch.com. All right. Thank you to our callers, our emailers, our listeners, and to Brandon, and we'll talk to you all next time.